honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit this week with Carl Berghofer of Embuto, New Mexico. He's still growing and selling fruit along the Rio Grande, right across State Road 68 from Embuto Valley Medical Center. Because Carl, of course, donated the land to build that medical center. On March 15, 1945, he was in need of some crucial medical care on the battlefield. Carl had already survived 23 days of combat on Iwo Jima and made it through some extremely close calls, but this would prove to be the closest call of all.
By 10 o'clock in the morning, we were making an advance through the last, up toward Catano Point, was the last hold out of the Japanese troops. We were advancing. It was a beautiful morning. That morning we had brought us out the new sea rations. We enjoyed a good breakfast. Then they ordered us to move out, and we moved out to L Company and I Company combined, and we had about 20 men left of the two companies, and we made an advance across this. There was a series of ridges and flats and ridges and flats. We went from one ridge to the other. Finally, we came to a ridge, and we were blowing foxholes close as we went, dropping grenades at them. It wasn't a shot fired at us. We came up on this little ridge, and we raised up and looked over it, and I was one of the persons to look over it. It looked like a mushroom field, Japanese helmets. Wow. And all of them had a rifle pointed at me. And I raised my legs up, and it took me 10 minutes to fall to the ground, and there was just a sheet of bullets came across the top of that ridge. The only way we could fire without getting hit was raise the rifles over his head and empty them in the general direction. And we threw all the grenades we had, and order finally came down for us to withdraw. And there was a flat area behind us and a big rock. So they started running one at a time, zigzagging and getting behind this rock. And I was about the fourth man through. The third man that went through, man, they really opened up on him, but he made it safely. And I made it about three jumps from that rock, and I got hit in the back of the head. I didn't know I got hit. Of course, I was knocked out. And I came to, I was laying on my face, my nose hurt. I thought I'd pull it and hit my nose on a rock. Then I felt the blood, and one of the guys behind the rock said, "Berghofer, you're still moving?" And I don't remember answering him, but he said, "If you can make about three jumps, I can grab you and jump, grab you and pull you behind this rock." So I laid there a minute and got my equilibrium back, and I got to my feet, and he reached out and grabbed me.
Wow.
And I evacuated myself back to base hospital. When I got back to the base hospital, I was treated by Dr. Raymond. And he was a surgeon from Santa Fe.
How about that?
I met with him several times after the war.
So what was the extent of your injuries?
I got a bullet hit in the back of my head. It was a glancing blow, but it pulled out a little piece of bone. He treated it and put a plate in it. It was supposed to have been silver, but I don't think it was. But it's since disappeared. It's been absorbed.
So you get hit. It knocks you unconscious.
Yeah.
You're lying on the ground.
Yeah.
They still have a line of sight on you, right?
I was still on the ground, so they quit shooting at me.
Right. Because you weren't moving, they stopped shooting.
Yeah.
If you had been moving, they probably would have shot you a few more times.
Yeah, they would have shot me again.
So it's a good thing you got knocked out.
Yeah.
Maybe saved your life.
Yeah.
And then you come to, and you don't know what happened.
I didn't know what happened. I thought it had hit my head on a rock.
Because when you fell, I'm sure you did hit something.
I broke my nose, I know.
Broke your nose.
And I thought that was where the blood was coming from, but then I realized it was running down the side of my head. Head wounds bleed real bad.
And so it penetrated your helmet and the liner?
Yeah, it went through my helmet in one side and out the other. Knocked a little 25 caliber hole going in. Some of my friends brought the helmet back to me on Guam. When they came back.
So when you're in the hospital recovering, they show up and give you the helmet?
I was in the hospital, and then I'd gone back to duty, and we were putting up the tents and everything for the Marines returning from Iwo. I was on duty already back on duty when they came back.
And so they gave you the helmet with two holes in it?
Yeah, I brought the helmet back, and I lost it somewhere in transit.
Oh, man. Well, again, I'm still just fascinated by this circumstance. You're 18 years old. You're shot in the head. You're unconscious. You come to. You're trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
And you know that the Japanese can still shoot you at any moment.
Yeah.
And your buddy's telling you, try to move over here and I'll grab you.
Yeah. He says, Berghofer, can you hear me? And I must answer him somehow. He says, if you could make about two jumps, he says, I can grab you. So I laid there and flexed myself. I remember that. And then I got to my feet, or I don't remember where I got clear to my feet or not. Anyway, I got up where I could jump and made about two or three jumps, and he grabbed me and pulled me higher that rock. And the Japanese never did shoot at me.
But you knew you were going to be exposing yourself to that fire by jumping over there.
Yeah.
How far do you think you had to go?
About 6 or 8 feet.
So then you're able to walk and move fine. You just have blood coming out of your head.
After I got back there, they bandaged me up, and I evacuated myself.
You had to be in pain.
Now, those medical corps, when I'm telling you, they were great people. They were great people. They were going in unarmed. A lot of them were Navy.
Right.
Medical corps, but attached to the Marine unit. I remember when they get mass casualties, they'd borrow morphine. We carried a little pouch on our thing with it had a roller bandage and a pack of dressing and a tube of morphine and a sulfa.
Right.
In each one of your little packs we carried on our belt, on a cartridge belt. He'd go around and borrow morphine from different people in the sofa because he didn't have enough in his pack to supply all the needs. And then we'd send back and he'd get replenishments. So, and one of the duties I dreaded on Iwo Jima was stretcher bearer duty. We'd pick up the wounded, sometimes the dead, and we'd carry them back to off the lines and back to a safe area. Sometimes clear down to the beach to the hospital ships, and the hospital ships, and they set up a tent field hospital on Iwo. That's what I went to. But we'd carry, and we'd have two men to a stretcher. We'd put a man on a stretcher, and we'd run from one rock or foxhole to the next and dive in the hole. We were under fire at that time. And we'd get them back out of the firing area, and then we'd carry them down to the beach. And on the return trip, we'd pick up water and gasoline from flamethrowers and extra ammunition and grenades and carry the loaded stretcher back to the lines. The stretcher duty was a hard duty. But I was on stretcher duty about 2 to 3 times a day.
And then, so when you get hit and you get yourself back to the field hospital.
Yeah.
And you told the surgeon from Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Put the plate in your head. Did you think you might get to go home?
I didn't think so at that time. But at that time, they didn't know about subdural hematomas.
Hmm.
You get a blow on one side of the head and the bruising is on the opposite side. And I suffered from severe headaches for months over my right temple. And actually, they were bad enough where I passed out a couple of times. And I was finally, after they dropped the atom bombs on Japan, I was immediately back to the States and given a medical discharge.
Well, I've got to ask you, too. I mean, the situation where you're digging that spot out and you set the rock up on the edge and you said you were a tenth of an inch away from being killed there.
Maybe an inch. If he'd been an inch higher, he'd have cut me in two.
How about when you got hit? What do you think the margin was there for you surviving versus getting killed?
Well, looking backwards now, in hindsight, I would say I had a 50-50 chance.
Because if he's a little lower, he could sever your spinal cord.
Without getting hit. And I had a good chance of being wounded.
I mean, I'm just thinking, if a bullet hits the back of your head, it's not very far from ending it for you right there.
Yeah, if he'd have led me just a speck more, he'd have caught me. He didn't realize how fast I was running.
I guess that's it.
Yeah.
How often have you thought about that over the years? Because now you've lived another...
I still have dreams about that. Every once in a while, I have dreams about that damn place.
I mean, and you've had 76 years since then.
Yeah.
And you're still farming. You're still active.
Yeah, I went back and went to work, and I concentrated on my job, and I take care of this place on weekends or days off or have a day or spell. I'd come in and work on the place. I built this house myself. It was built out of railroad ties, the old GNRGW railroad. They pulled it up at the beginning of World War II.
Uh-huh.
They pulled it up a railroad and that really depressed the entire area. But they needed iron for rails for the war effort. They saved all the iron and all the spikes and everything to melt it down and put it into cannons and tank reinforcement.
So you salvaged the railroad ties and framed this house with it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm not trying to be dramatic or put thoughts in your head, but when you come that close to being killed at 18 years old, and now you look back, you know, 76 years later, and you know the life you've had and the children and the grandchildren and all the impact you've had through your career and how many people you've fed through this farm, how do you account for all that? How do you size up what happened there and why?
Well, I'll tell you what it did. Teach me compassion. That's one thing I learned out of that Marine Corps experience was compassion from a fellow man.
I'm sure there's been a few times, you know, in all these years that you've seen that famous photo that Rosenthal took of those Marines raising that flag.
I've got pictures of it.
When you see that, what does it bring to mind for you?
Well, I remember all the people that were on in the service with me. Ira Hayes had helped raise the flag on Iwo Jima.
Right.
He was a Pima Indian, Apache Pima. I really admired him, and I looked up to him. He was brought against his will. He wanted to stay with his unit. He was brought against his will and went into war bond drive, and where they plied him with lots of whiskey and lots of food, and he wasn't used to that. I remember when he died, I felt real bad about it. He died in January in an irrigation ditch on the Pima Reservation, froze to death. I really felt bad about that.
Yeah, it was a tragic story.
He was a good man. It was all poor on him.
You mentioned that, you know, you had headaches for months after your injury. Have there been any other lasting effects of what happened to you?
No lasting effects. We did had a bone scan here about 10 years ago. I've lived a very active life. I've broken a lot of bones. And they said that head wound is completely cleaned up, healed up. And no sign of the plates that they were supposed to put in it. So I guess it was, they said they think it was probably absorbed in over the period of years.
It's been a long time.
But the headaches gradually went away after about, it was about a year.
I've heard a lot of Marines say, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
Right today, I'm proud of the Corps. If I was to go in again, I would enlist the Marines. My younger son was in the Marines. He was in the 9th Regiment in Vietnam. He was wounded over there, and he died in a car wreck about 30 days after he came home.
Mm. Yeah, your family has quite a legacy of service, doesn't it?
Yeah, starting with my ancestral family, Jost Harbaugh came over from Kaiserslautern, Germany, settled in Pennsylvania, and his sons were involved in the French-Indian War. One of them was killed during Braddock's debacle. And he was in they fought on the Patriot side during the Revolutionary War. And my great-grandfather came from Hesse in Germany, and he was in the war with Mexico. He came in here with the Mormon battalion that came in. He wasn't a Mormon, but he was with the Missouri Mounted Cavalry, and they went on to California. And then my grandfather was in the Spanish-American War with Cuba. My father was in World War I, and I was in World War II. My brother was in the Korean War. Then I had two sons in the Vietnam War, and then I've had grandkids that served in the Gulf War.
Hasn't missed any generations, has it?
Yeah, well, we've had generations of people that volunteer for the service.
Well, when you think about that, especially with your generation, you know, I think about what you told me, that you had 240 men in your company going into Iwo Jima. And by the end of that campaign, there were only 11 who hadn't been killed.
11 of the original people. We'd been replaced three or four times.
Because those are all casualties.
Yeah, the casualties were replaced with raw recruits. And we'd been replaced three or four times. So actually, our company probably suffered 120% casualties.
Which seems impossible, but it's not. Well, and I don't mean to make light of that, because this is life or death. These are high stakes. And just those statistics you cite tell us that the odds were not in your favor, right? You had to beat some significant odds to survive.
Well, I probably had an 80% chance of being wounded and about a 20% chance of being killed on Iwo.
Have you ever tried to answer the question why? Or how? Why or how you survived?
I was attributed to luck. I was just lucky. And was well trained to keep undercover and use the terrain as much as I could for protection. And I had been raised in the outdoors and hunting and trapping and farming, and my time in the Game and Fish Department, I was pretty well, and was in good physical shape. The practice that animals practice with people, learning how to hide and conceal and when to run and when not to. And
I'm sure when you were on Iwo, you saw some of the crosses there.
Yeah, I went down to visit the cemetery before I left Iwo, before I got wounded, in fact. I see just lines and lines of crosses.
Well, how should those guys be remembered?
They should be remembered as guys that didn't want to go, but went because they were asked to, and it was their duty to go. They sacrificed themselves for a good cause. If the Army and the Navy and the Marine Corps hadn't won World War II, we'd be a Japanese and German-speaking nation right today. People never know how close we come to losing World War II. That's my own opinion.
I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us this story.
Don't think of thanking me, because it was just part of my duty, your young life.
Well, most people haven't gone through what you went through, and you're telling us that story helps us understand that price that's been paid for the freedom we enjoy. I'm wondering for you, as you look back over 95 years, is there something you would say you're most thankful for or most proud of?
Well, I'm thankful for my life, with my family and my wife and my kids. I've had a good life, actually. I've led a good life. I've been active all my life, and I can't complain.
And is there anything that you're still looking forward to that you haven't done yet?
Oh, I'd like to do a lot of things, but my eyesight and my hearing, and I just can't see to do them. I'd like to do some more help for my neighbors and my friends that I'm just not able to do anymore. I went into volunteer work with ambulance service and fire service, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed helping others.
As someone who has farmed this land for as long as you have,
yeah,
is there some advice you would have for other people who pursue that? Or is there something maybe you think that people misunderstand about that?
Well, farming is a dedicated work. It's not a five-day-a-week, it's a seven-day-a-week job. The fruit grows and the weeds grow and everything on Saturdays and Sundays, just without an exception. But it's a good life. And I would recommend it to most everybody. I think everybody nowadays ought to turn their lawns and the town into gardens, produce something good. They can raise fruit and vegetables on half the water the lawn takes.
And what keeps you going with that? Why do you still do it? What motivates you?
Well, I just like it. I just enjoy it. There's a divine plan for things. I believe there's a God. I believe God watches over us. But I think he also makes you help yourself. He might help you to help yourself. I'm sure that God is with us and has an influence on our lives. I'm positive of that. But I also believe that he helps you to help yourself more than protect you.
One more question about your farming operation here. Is there a particular fruit, tree, or crop that you're most proud of that's your pride and joy?
Cherries and apricots. I like to eat them, I like to raise them, and they're a good seller of produce. My cherries, I have Bings, Royal Ads, and Yellow Transparents, or golden cherries.
I guess the one more question I have to ask, it may sound a little trite or cliche, but I think it's relevant because people can hear how energetic you are. Not everybody your age is still as active as you are. Doesn't have a memory as sharp as yours. So I've got to ask you, what's your secret?
Well, just everything in moderation. Eat plenty of good food, a little meat, a little grain, a little potatoes, lots of fruit, and stay active. That's the thing, just stay active.
There is no question he stays active. And the next time you pass through Embuto, New Mexico on State Road 68, or the River Road to Taos, as it's often called, you may be able to literally taste the fruit of his labor. Carl Berghofer, celebrating birthday number 95 this week. Big thanks to Maria Baca for letting us know about her friend Carl. For photos and a short video from Carl's orchard along the Rio Grande, visit hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And I hope you'll join us again next time when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.